Okay, I would like to call this Board of Education meeting for March 19th, 2018 to order. May I get a roll call, please?
Mr. Davis is not here. Mrs. DeGracias.
Here.
Mrs. Hickey.
Here.
Mr. Martiri.
Yep.
Mr. Moore.
Here.
Dr. Thompson.
Here.
Ms. Williams.
Here.
All right, so the first thing that we always do is recognize visitors and invite comments from the public. I recognize many of you, visitors or otherwise. Do we have comments? All right, so then I need a motion to approve the agenda for
So moved.
Second.
Ms. Williams.
Yes.
Dr. Thompson.
Yes.
Mr. Moore.
Yeah.
Mr. Martiri.
Yep.
Mrs. Hickey.
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias.
Here. And yes. Sorry.
Okay, do we have any communications?
Nope. Not that I know of.
All right. I know we had a couple of Freedom of Information Act requests. Ed, you want to chat about those?
Yes. So they were pertaining to PO's vendor information specific to financial accounting software. After further questioning from Anthony, the requester indicated that that request no longer needed to be honored based upon some limitations we had in how we maintain that information. The second request was for determining starting salaries for teachers newly employed in 2017-18 school year, which was easily responded to.
Excellent. Well, that brings us to, hopefully, technology permitting, the student presentation.
I know we have a public comment first, a public commenter who maybe wanted to, or do you want to do that as part of the student presentation? Ms. Carruthers, I know you wanted to do
I'm
a little intro. Is that okay?
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Okay.
I'm all part of the same thing for Andrew. So my main name is Sue Carruthers, and I actually am the founding director of the Young Filmmakers Contest. And I just wanted to give you a little background so you could understand Andrew's achievement. The Young Filmmakers Contest started the second year of the One Earth Film Festival, so it's part of the One Earth Film Festival. And we engaged students and we introduced it because we believe that youth are the next generation of great thinkers. They are inheriting this planet, and so we felt that they very much deserve to have a voice at the table with regards to climate change and sustainability. So we created this festival, and in our first, this contest, in our first year, we had 18 entries, and that was 6 years ago. We had 115 entries from across the country this year. So Andrew had tough competition, and we had 20 judges make these decisions, six winners and five honorable mentions, and Andrew was one of our winners. As part of the contest and the holistic approach, we cover the five topics of sustainability, which are part of the River Forest and Oak Park Sustainability Plan. And one of the topics of being waste, which is what Andrew covered in his film. We asked for them to be researched and solution-based, and we offered them a prize, and then we also offered them a matching grant in the same amount to an organization of their choice that is working on the topic of their film. And this is to create activism and connect them to people who are already working on what they're passionate about. So Andrew worked with Mr. Cadlec, and they researched the organization, and they gave a $100 grant to Plastic Ocean Foundation. And Plastic Ocean Foundation is a global nonprofit organization that addresses the issues of pollution and its impact on our water, sea life, and humans. So I usually introduce the film, but we have Andrew here, so I'm going to let him take over and introduce his own film.
Excellent.
Thank you.
So I decided to make this film because my science teacher, Mr. Cadlec, informed me that there was an opportunity to make a film, and I had made films before in other schools, and so I decided that it would be a good thing to try, and so I did it, and now, yeah, that's what
And here you are standing in front of everyone with the t-shirt.
Do you do autographs afterwards?
It's
yeah.
On a press.
Can we roll the magic?
Yeah.
All right.
Plastic is a commonly used material that we use every day, especially plastic bags. Did you know that enough plastic is thrown away each year to serve circle the world 4 times. So, where does it all go? Most plastic bags that are littered or disposed incorrectly end up in the ocean, where the plastic bags then go to harm the marine life. Nearly 90% of our ocean's debris is plastic. And here is the worst part. Those plastic bags are causing over 100,000 sea turtle and other marine life deaths each year. When fish eat plastic bags, they ingest toxins. If the fish that eat plastic bags are also the fish that we eat, then we can also be harmed. These fish also don't have to eat the plastic right away, because the plastic will stay in the ocean for 400 to 1,000 years before it breaks down. But plastic bags are not just bad in water. 1 billion plastic bags are used in the U.S. every year. That is enough to fill up around 22 million garbage trucks. The sad part is, only 1 to 2% of that is disposed correctly, or around 230,000 garbage trucks. There are so many bags in this world. At almost every shop or store that we go to, they are giving us plastic bags to hold our stuff. And let's face it, there's normally more than one bag that we walk out of the store with. And because of this, we have made plastic bags the second most common thing littered in our planet, followed by cigarette butts. So, what can we do? Well, to start, we can stop using plastic bags at all. When you next go to a store, you can buy a reusable bag at the counter. Then give it to the cashier, and instead of them putting your stuff in plastic, they will put it in an eco-friendly reusable bag. If you do have one, then you can take it to the shop with you, and if you put it on the conveyor belt with your stuff, they will automatically know to put your stuff in it. Did you know that by doing this, you will not only save the environment, but you will also save some of your own money? And if you still have some plastic bags from when you did buy them, you can go to your local grocery store, and they will have a plastic bag disposal just for plastic bags to make sure that they are disposed correctly. If everyone follows these small steps, then we can make a big difference. So let's come together and rethink.
Rethink the impact we have on our Earth. Rethink our own choices.
Rethink how eco-friendly we are.
Rethink how much plastic we use.
Rethink how I want to treat my Earth.
So come join us and let's rethink together, because plastic is not fantastic.
Very good.
That's truly excellent.
Thank you.
You used a lot of different kinds of cinematography there, too.
Yes.
That's a really big deal. Oops, I don't know what this is. I think it's the next video. Sorry about that. But it was really impressive the way that you kind of combined all of that together. And it looked like you got some other people to help you out.
Yes.
Being willing to be filmed. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So, well,
great job with the narration.
Thank you.
All right, well, if you would like to come forward, I know our board members would love to shake your hand. So why don't you come on forward and come on around and start with Mr. Davis.
My son won the first board.
Oh. Great job. So, yeah.
Thank you. I learned so much. Thank you. Thank you.
Great job, Andrew. Thank you.
Well done.
But I didn't find myself in the Jewel video.
Oh, you were in it? Look for Jewel there in Tampa.
He's
wearing
a shopper.
Nicely
done. Thank you. Really cutting work. I know Mr. Materi has something he wants to
give you a credit.
Give you as well.
I don't think moms get credit.
Yeah, so
you're right.
The board of District 90 is giving you a certificate of recognition for your great work. Smile, look at the camera. There you go. One, two, three.
Thank you.
A pleasure. Thank you.
Yes, congratulations.
Making all of River Forest proud. So, next I need a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes minutes from the Committee of the Whole meeting of March 6, 2018, the Board of Education meeting February 28, 2018, and the closed session that day, payrolls, orders relating to payrolls, bills, and a treasurer's report. Get a motion.
So moved. Second.
Roll call. Mr. Davis, who just arrived a few minutes ago?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias? Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mr. Motiri?
Yep.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Okay, that moves us straight into the board committee portion of the agenda. Nicole Thompson on education.
Yes, so at our last Committee of the Whole meeting, we had a very nice presentation about some of the new things in education, talking about moving to more standard-based grading and explaining that. And so that's pretty much the latest update.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Personnel, Rich?
Later on, we have a personnel report, lots of resolutions, approvals, and appointments.
Yeah, there'll be some signing this evening. Policy, Stacy?
Nothing to report
this time. Such a good report from the policy committee, Stacy. Finance, Cal?
In our board package, we'll have the accounts payable for the month and the treasury report.
Equity Committee, we gave our report last time around. There will be a follow-up meeting of the Tri-Board Committee. It's currently being scheduled. We're coordinating. And a number of recommendations have been made to the various boards that they're following up on, including doing an inventory of past equity work and moving forward on working together with the Collaboration for Early Childhood on getting materials available at every one of the schools so that birth through four, any parent or guardian can come to any of the schools and be given the information they need to find whatever services they may require for early childhood purposes. So that stuff is moving forward. There's actually been some tangible steps. So that's it on the Equity Committee. Facilities. Judy.
Bless you.
Bless you.
Excuse me. Judy, anything on facilities?
Oh, I'm sorry.
You were busy sneezing.
I didn't hear that. Later in our packet, we've got something about a roof needing to be redone for Roosevelt, a bid.
Is that important? Okay. Communications, Barb.
There's nothing really big to report right now. We have had a few informal conversations on this side of the table about putting the outstanding PowerPoints that we've had in conjunction with the COW presentations that have been made to the board, talking about trying to put those on the website and make them generally available to the public so that all of the good work that goes into them can be shared. And I believe we just had the suggestion to try to put Andrew's film on the website as well. As far as I know, there's nothing else important going on. We have not met to talk about communications in a while. Ed, can you think of anything on that thing?
No, just a reminder for the community that we did send out a communication today for the meet and greet with the forthcoming director of special ed who will be here at Roosevelt tomorrow afternoon from 3:30 to 5:00 to meet the community.
Speaking
welcome,
of which,
one and all.
Ed, where's the forum on Wednesday night for the equity convening?
It is at D200, and it will be in the staff cafe at OPRF.
So a number of groups involved with equity in the Oak Park River Forest community are getting together as a community forum pulled together by some of the more active individuals in Oak Park. D90 will be represented there. Ed will be there. I'll be there. Who else will be there?
From District 90, we will also have Dr. Peter Chen.
Okay.
And faculty member Christine Buchmann.
And Peter's obviously very active on our inclusivity advisory board. Next, we, you know, the board established a new ad hoc committee on gender inclusion. It has been pulled together under the leadership of Barb and Rich. Do you have anything you want to talk?
Yeah, during the standards-based grading board meeting, the previous board meeting, I attended a workshop slash dinner regarding the issue, the transgender issue, and was presented by a lawyer who presented kind of the past year's history of what's going on in terms of Washington, Springfield, and districts. So that'll be part of something I can bring to the transgender committee meeting once we get going.
Have you filled out your committee?
That committee is finalized. We've gotten acceptances from a number of very well-qualified people who represent a cross-section of the community. The different schools are represented, the administration and teachers are represented, community, parents. Got a few people who kind of fit into two different buckets. It's a group of eight, and we're starting small because that seems to be the most reasonable way to get a handle on what issues we want to talk about. But we have got the crew in place, and now, as usual, we're all trying to find a date on which to meet.
Right. There you go.
Which
the
is one of the harder
Harney
things
Carney.
That any committee
right.
has to do.
Well, Barbara, I speaking for myself, and I'm sure other board members, we're really thrilled that you and Rich took this on. It's a really important initiative. We want to get it right, and we know it's going to take some hard work and a lot of research to get something right and make recommendations for it, so we appreciate you doing this.
Well, we've got a lot of confidence in the people who are going to work with us.
Ed, to put you on the district calendar review.
Yes, so this is on page 56 in your board packets. A few items that are forthcoming. I think everyone is aware that spring break will be beginning on Monday. Classes resume April 2nd, and there's some likely discussion that the Cal meeting for April 3rd will very likely be canceled. That has to yet be confirmed.
Yeah, I'll step to plate on that. So we initially were holding that meeting for another tri-board meeting to report on equity, and we're not at a point where a report makes sense. The Culture and Climate Committee for the Oak Park River Forest High School has just not quite yet finalized some of its recommendations, which tie into the equity work we're doing, and some of the coordination work is still going on. So we thought that the tri-board meeting, which all three districts are still interested in doing, should be put off a little bit. And we want to use these town hall forums wisely. We don't want to waste people's time. So we do want to hold that next town hall forum styled meeting for something in between when we get this tri-board committee or tri-board meeting set up again. And cover one of the topics that's of interest. We've been kicking around a few of them, Ed and I talking, like one of them, for instance, is the First Amendment right of students, and I think these walkouts in relation to gun violence and gun laws, I really bring that to the forefront, and that's a nice frame to put it in, and maybe we should do a town hall forum around that, explain what the rights of students are under the First Amendment as they attend not just middle school but high school. Maybe the community would be interested in that. So it's in likelihood we can't pull that off between now and then in a thoughtful way, have good speakers, et cetera, et cetera. So we will probably cancel that meeting. Wasting people's time is probably not a good thing to do. Fair?
Fair. We will also be very proud to host at Willard on the 6th, the International Film and Culture Festival, which is 5:30 to 8 p.m. There is a forthcoming Board of Ed meeting in April on April 16th. And on April 18th, the Inclusiveness Advisory Board will be having a learning session hosted by the National Equity Project from 5:30 to 9 p.m. in the Roosevelt NPR. So while that's predominantly aimed at the Inclusiveness Advisory Board members, any community member will be invited, and certainly faculty, interested faculty and staff as well.
And Ed, when are we presenting for about our equity initiatives for the School Board Association?
April 28th, we will be at the equity event, the IASB equity event, which is going to be
at the Hyatt, I think, right?
Oh, gosh.
So we will get out a notice, but Ed and I are going to be presenting on D90's equity initiative for the Illinois Association of School Boards as part of a panel, I believe, with a couple of other districts. Is it at the Hyatt?
It's at the Hyatt in Lyle.
Hyatt in Lyle.
It's Saturday, April 28th, 10:45 a.m.
So usually there's pretty good attendance. I think when they briefed us on the phone call, what'd they say? About they're expecting
a couple hundred.
Couple hundred people in the room, school board members, anyone from D90 wants to come, hear what other districts are doing, network some other people. I'd recommend you coming in. And I have done this before, and we don't gild the lily much. We talk about it, you know, both the challenges and the many rewards that we've experienced from doing that. But I thought it's not part of the official district calendar, but I did want to mention it during the calendar. Okay. All right. So that brings us to outside meetings. Are you done?
Yes, absolutely.
Council of Governments, next meeting is May 11th. OPRF Community Council, Rich?
The Imagine co-chairs kind of presented the process for that committee. The Imagine committee at OPRF is imagining anything and everything that could happen with OPRF's facilities, but they didn't really give any particulars. They just kind of talked about the process. Then,
any talk of a poll?
Somebody threw that out there, and then the crickets. Then the assistant superintendent, Greg Johnson, gave a focus on curriculum. So if you want to know what teachers are doing when Wednesday is late starts, and they have a good hour where they meet in their teacher collaboration teams. And what I found was interesting that over the next 4 years, they're going to work on priority standards. So all of these, you know, like freshman English team will articulate, much like standards-based grading, or exactly like standards-based grading, articulate their priority standards. And so that's very typical, and that's good articulation. But what I found was interesting is that they're going to make these priority standards public and a public document. So you can go to English 1, you can see the priority standards, and you can click on the standard as, you know, as a parent or community member, and see exactly what the standards are for your child in that particular class. And the vision is for all of these classes to have that. So if you have eight different teachers teaching English 1, you should all have the same standards. Good goal.
Youth Network Council, Barb.
The Youth Network Council met this month with similar conversation points to what we usually have. There is a lot of concern, I think, with various kinds of substance abuse, particularly vaping seems to be on the rise. And I know that there's a presentation coming up on the part of Impact to talk about that. And I'm not sure what the, Stacy, is the date?
Hold on, I can tell you.
I want to say it's April 11th.
Yeah,
11th
right.
Or 12th, somewhere in there.
April 11th.
But
Wednesday
it's going
evening.
To be held at the high school, and it's going to be informational for parents.
Yes.
Targeted mostly to that audience as opposed to what they did the last time when they talked about social media and they also included students. This is more informational for parents so that they can get an idea what some of the risks are and what they look like. And these are always concerns for the network council, which deals in mental health and counseling kinds of concerns. The PTO council will be meeting on Friday. That's the next point. So I've not seen them in a while.
Stacy, Inclusiveness Advisory Board?
Ed mentioned our NEP training, and then are we still having the meeting on the 9th, right after that, May 9th?
We have yes.
Okay.
We do.
So we have an upcoming meeting on May 9th.
Sweet. Service Club, Nicole.
Mm. So they were supposed to have a candidate forum in March, and they weren't able to, I guess, find a venue for that location. I'm not sure if they end up having a separate meeting besides that, but in addition, they're also still talking about their involvement and the amount of involvement in the Memorial Day Parade and discussing that.
Is it now the River Forest Civic Association? We should change our minutes to reflect the actual name of the organization going forward. That's why Anthony and I are making faces. I'm part of it, so I'm embarrassed that I can't remember the exact name we voted on. I did vote in favor of the final name, but there you go.
It did go by the service club for many years.
Kind of breaking old habits is a difficult thing. Citizens Core Council, Judy?
They have not convened since mid-February when they last met. So they're expecting to meet in preparation for the Memorial Day festivities.
Excellent. The West Cook Governing Board is coming up in June for the IASB, and I think more important than that, this IASB training on equity and the discussion with other school districts, I think would be interesting. So hopefully some of our fellow board members can make it out to that. I was not able to make the last EdRed meeting. Ed, I think you weren't either.
That's correct.
So neither of us were able to make it. I was out of state, and I know Ed had a direct conflict on his calendar, so unfortunately we can't report on that. And then the River Forest Subcommittee on Collaboration, Barb.
We will be meeting tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock at the Village Hall, and the topic of conversation at that point in time, the focus of this group has been to talk about how the various elected government entities can collaborate on communication that would be of value to citizens of River Forest. And the first thing that we're looking at is how to design and make available a community calendar, which is fed by all of the different entities so that people can look at what's going, they can look at the date and they can see things of interest that are going on at the high school, things that are going on with us, things that are going on with the townships, trying to get all of that information in one place and to get it there in such a way that it is as usable as possible, enough without being too much. What's the format going to look like? And we're going to be bringing the tech advisor that the village has hired. They're going to be working with each of the tech people from the various entities. And I think that what we've determined is that most of us have an RSS feed, I believe. That's the technical term for it. But it's already in place, and that's what populates the calendars from each of the various different organizations. And if we all have that in the same format, then we have a good place to start to begin building this larger resource that is going to put all of this information together in one place. So we're going to be talking about that tomorrow evening, which I'm excited about the possibilities there. It's a good place to start.
Excellent. All right, district meeting agendas.
So we had two to share this month. The first is the Universal Design for Learning meeting. This is on page 58. Where they were preparing they were working together to prepare for presentations that will be delivered at building meetings to introduce faculty and staff members to kind of deeper understanding about universal design and what it is, benefits and advantages. We have actually two of our administrative leaders, both Ms. Steckety and Dr. Hawley, who've been tremendous, along with Ms. Wood, in bringing leadership to this work in the room. They're excited about that, and the nice thing about that being done at the building levels is that it'll be specific to either elementary or middle school discussion. Obviously, the way in which UDL is implemented is contingent upon, obviously, the classroom setting. And so for teachers to have a better understanding, we'll ask some questions at the building meetings and then continue to build interest and support. That's really the next stage. Similarly, the Superintendent's Leadership Council is working on developing a presentation that will be delivered at the April 27th Faculty Institute Day for all faculty and staff. That'll probably be done here at Roosevelt, and it's part of, the board is very familiar, part of the communications plan that we'll be implementing for standards-based grading. The board heard a little bit, for community members that are here, a little bit last month about standards-based grading and why that is a direction that District 90 is really interested in moving. One of the essential elements of doing that well is making sure that we start to build some shared foundational understanding about the benefit of that. Because it does represent a significant change from what, particularly as adults, many of us remember about how we were graded in school. So that's a journey, but more to come.
So now we're going into your
report
and action items.
Absolutely. So our first action item will actually be presenting from the business office. I'll ask Anthony, please, to walk you through the process we use to establish the fiscal year.
Sure. As part of the school code, you are required to act on establishing a fiscal year each year, and our fiscal year is July 1 to June 30, so if you don't have any objection to that, like all other school districts in the state, you would vote to adopt this resolution, as well as appointing the superintendent or his designee to draft the tentative budget for the upcoming year. So I would.
How does it feel to be a designee there, Anthony?
I've been there for a long time. So if you are have a motion to establish
a
fiscal year.
To approve.
So moved.
Second.
Ms. Williams.
Yes.
Dr. Thompson.
Yes.
Mr. Moore.
Yes.
Mr. Martieri?
Yep.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGrassis?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
The second item is also a business item, well, second and third. So, Anthony, would you maybe kind of carry us on with discussion about the summer school fees?
Sure. Page 64, you see the memo. As Dr. Hawley spoke about at a previous meeting, this, there's a proposition to the summer school's calendar this year. Changing a portion of it to offer weekly classes, or, and I say weekly very loosely because the weeks, various weeks are 7 days, 5 days, 4 days, and then 5 days for the over those 4 week span. Summer school goes from June 13th to July 13th, with June 13th being the teacher work day. So starting July 14th, which is a Thursday, that starts your 7 weeks, 7 day session. Then you have a 5 day session, and then the week of 4th of July is only a 4 day session, and then a 5 day session end up on July 13th. So the elementary school portion of summer school will be remain unchanged. It'll just be classes that are 3 1-hour sessions for those 4 weeks. A portion of the middle school will also remain that way, but then this portion of the middle school classes that are being offered under this new program of being able to choose those sessions independent for those weekly sessions, or, you know, modified weekly sessions. So normally you would see a pro forma profit and loss statement, and going back a few years, just a loss statement on the summer school program. But knowing that there's so much variability with not only the revenues, not knowing how many students will enroll for this program now that it's modified, but even the expenditure side, because if, for example, no one enrolls in the four-day session, then no classes are going to be held, therefore there will be no expenditures, no salaries for that week. Those classes won't take place. So I've summarized what I wanted you to approve in paragraph form rather than in an Excel spreadsheet. So if you notice, the prior year fees for a resident for a four-week class was $146 per class, and there was a $25 late fee. For a non-resident, $182 with a $25 late fee. Roosevelt Readiness was $50 for only a one-week class, because that's how long Roosevelt Readiness has always been, and the remediative sessions of $98 for the 4 weeks. I had to break that down into a five-day session, so it's $34.76 for a resident. We're proposing a 6.44% increase to go to $37 for a five-day session. Not a lot of rationale. Obviously, we've had CPI increases in the past. We thought this was an opportunity, changing it this much to this new format, to get a little bit more of an increase to try to close the gap if we do have a good enrollment. So as you can see, the same percentage increase being used, $52 for the seven-day session, and $29 for the four-day session. Knowing that there are 2 5-day sessions in that, if a student enrolls for the entire amount of summer school, the cost will be $155. Compare that to the $146. You can do the math yourself on what type of an increase that is. For non-residents, it calculates to those amounts of for the 7-day, 5-day, and 4-day sessions respectively. If someone enrolls in the entire amount, it will be $194 as comparison to $182. Once again, still having the $25 late fee assessed. We're proposing a Roosevelt Readiness rate to increase to $60 for that 5-day session. We won't be holding the 5-day session during the 4-day session for obvious reasons. And during the 7-day session, we're only going to hold it 5 of those days. And if I say the words 5, 7, or 4 any more times, just stop me. I'm seeing your eyes glaze over. To get to the expenditure side, teachers will be paid at the rate according to the collective bargaining agreement, or $45.95 an hour, which is only a 2.1% increase from last year. And then you can see high school aides, college students, current district 90 aides as well. And then as part of your personnel report tonight, you will see that there are principals, the summer school principal rate, special ed coordinator, the special ed coordinator mentor, because there's a changing of that role, as well as the nurse. This memo is in hopes that you will approve the summer school rates, not the expenditure side, because that's being held in the personnel side. Are there any questions with all of those calculations?
Can I get a motion?
Okay.
Motion to approve.
Okay. Second?
Second.
I would have known it was going to be that easy. I would have just said, see the memo. Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Mr. Martiri?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
On to the next page, in which these are the regular registration fees, in which I'm not going to go through all this. All I'm going to say, I want you to pay close attention to the fact that they are a suggested increase of 2.1%, which is the CPI increase. And you'll see the early bird discount calculated. You may have remembered, and you can see on the left-hand side, we had a late fee penalty. Well, according to the recent non-regulatory guidance by the Illinois State Board of Education, they frown on late fees, so we're just going to drop those. So this proposal is to approve the amount of registration fees increased by CPI or 2.1%, but still holding on to the early bird, but eliminating the late fees.
May I get a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mr. Martiri?
Yep.
Mr. Moore? Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Ms. Williams?
Yes. And do we have a sense how many families take advantage of the early bird fees?
Percentage-wise, I would say it's about 15%. And I was going to thank you for bringing that up. I take that back. That's incorrect. It's about 40%.
Mm-hmm.
15% are late fee, but it is, I would say that is decreased mm-hmm. over the past years. So we don't expect revenues to decrease by 15% by not taking advantage of those late fees.
Not coincidentally, we found that the larger the family, the more frequently they take advantage of the early bird.
Oh, I'm sure, yes. Indeed. Makes sense.
Do we want to talk a little bit about the roof bid? I don't know if Judy has anything to share as well, but
I can go right into it if you'd like.
I think Anthony's memo.
I think you can work on it in 4-day, 5-day, 7-day increments, Anthony.
Considering that I'm giving you the top three roofers from the bid, just so you know, there were 10 contractors at the pre-bid walkthrough, seven submitting bids. Here are the top three. Without going into all the details about with or without engineering costs, with or without contingencies, you see that the recommended bid from A1 Roofing of $324,000, which includes a $28,000 contingency, plus a $4,400 performance bond, has been recommended by our roofing consultant. They've done work in our district before, most recently in 2015 for the Lincoln, the non-green roof portion of Lincoln's addition in 2015, with no issues. And there are our roofing engineer consultant has not found any issues with the work that they've done with them in the past. So we're hoping for a motion to award this bid.
What's
after
the timing?
It'll have to start after summer school.
That's what I was thinking. So much for mess.
The largest roof that's being replaced is the North Gym. In fact, there are many roofs in this. As you know, there are 24 roofs at Roosevelt School, mm-hmm. all with different dates of useful life. The largest one being of this project being over the North Gym. Then there's a small one that is over the vestibule on the Jackson Street side. Then there are a couple little huts somewhere in the middle of the building that are a different type of material. Then there is a couple of slate roofs that need repair. So all of those things are going into this project. The main mobilization will be for the North Gym. They believe they can do it in the prescribed time after July 13th
and before
August 18th.
Okay, just so I'm clear, this does not include all 24?
No, no, it does not.
This includes only the stuff
only the ones that are mentioned.
That are the useful life is...
Yes, we have a roof schedule. It's a long spreadsheet, and all 48 roofs in the district have various times when we know they're coming due. And these are the ones that came due this time. As you see on the five-year facility plan, I think there might be one more roof in that time frame at Willard, I believe. I know that Lincoln and has a roof, and the administration just outside that five-year plan. I have it going all the way to 2031. Hope that's not my retirement year.
And without the contingency fee, it's $2,000 less than the estimated cost.
That's
right?
Correct.
$296. So.
Yes. They came in good.
Thank you.
They'll find a way to use that,
that
contingency fee.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is just so you know, it's for found conditions in the field. This roofing consultant works a little bit differently than our current architect. He generally doesn't include that in the bid base.
Right. Do we have any other questions?
How frequently do we get them redone?
Well, different types of roofs have
different
lengths. Slate roofs can go 100 years. This type of roof was done, as you know, the North Gym was done in 1998, so that's 20 years.
Any other? Ask them now, forever hold your peace. All right, can I get a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second. Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Mr. Martieri?
Yep.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGrassi?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
So, thank you. I will notify them, and we will also be attending, having a meeting with the Regional Office of Education to get a building permit for that, just like we did for the Willard project.
Thank you, Anthony. The last action item we have actually tonight is the agreement for participation in the pre-K program. This will look very familiar to our board members who saw it last month, but the agreement with the River Forest Community Center needed a little bit of tweaking. And board members will see they have two copies of the agreement in their packet. The first clean copy starts on page 68, and then the redline version starts on page 77. So just to make it easier for you to look at what the changes were, if you turn to page 81, you'll see that at the board's request, we removed Section 7F, which was some kind of redundant language regarding the board's obligation to maintain confidentiality, which was already addressed in sections A and B, subsections A and B. And then the addition of language in section 8B, specific to observers and volunteers. And just for the board's peace of mind, I had actually a very positive, as no surprise of course, conversation with Dick Chappelle, the director of the River Forest Community Center, about that language, but just as importantly, about their practice. And so, while I'm glad certainly that we were able to kind of get the language tightened up in the agreement, it was helpful for me too in terms of learning more and increasing my already high confidence about the procedures they have in place to maintain student safety. So we'd be requesting, unless there were other items.
It strikes me as they listened to our comments from the last go around and made the changes we wanted, so. Mm-hmm. I was comfortable with that. Stacy, I know you had some of the similar concerns. Are you comfortable with it?
Okay. Yeah, no, I think it works.
All right. So do we have any other questions? Are we now okay with this? No more questions? Can I get a motion to approve?
Motion to approve as revised.
Second.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mr. DeGrassius?
Yes.
Mr. Sicky?
Yes.
Mr. Martieri?
Yep.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Dr. Thomas?
Yes.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Okay, so that brings us to the information items, and the first portion of the information items section this evening really deals largely with staffing for the forthcoming year. As the board is well aware, over time, you know, we do try to obviously monitor our longitudinal statistics, enrollment statistics, and staffing statistics, but it's an imperfect science. And some of that comes from the relatively small size of our school district. It doesn't take much sometimes, either in the economy or in the community, to really change our figures based upon either spikes in enrollment from new families moving to River Forest, or less often, but occasionally, declines in enrollment from, you know, turnover. So we wanted to start this evening by presenting you on page 88 with the most recent version of our enrollment statistics. You'll see, and we haven't looked at these for a couple of months at the board level, but as I hope you would expect, the administration's been monitoring them. in preparation for the staffing recommendations. You'll see that we are sitting fairly soundly in relation to our anticipated numbers, but still running high from the CASARDA enrollment projections. We thought we would likely be more in the medium range, having just conducted that geodemographic survey relatively recently. So long story short, the students are still coming. And we met with a lovely family just this morning, Karen Buzel and Casey and I, with two more youngsters who will be at our door. So that is a wonderful scenario that families want to continue, of course, to come and enroll their children in D90, but it does cause us to understand the importance of being prepared, well, balance that with responsible expenditures. There are probably, other than what's apparent here on the page, there are no real highlights or elements that jump off that I'd want to note with you, although we'll be talking a little bit about the anticipated decline in kindergarten at Willard. Interestingly, this is probably the first time in the 7 years I know that I've been in the district where the numbers are relatively clean in terms of falling within the student-teacher ratios for recommended figures, almost across the board, both elementary schools and, you know, very cleanly at Roosevelt as well. So again, while total, I guess the takeaway would be from this document, while total enrollment is up, it's dispersed broadly across the district such that there's no, from last year to the forthcoming year, there's no anticipated, you know, large spike of students that we expect to see in one grade level or another that might impact significantly for additional staffing. Nor is there obviously any significant opportunity for declining personnel costs. So that's the good and the bad. Any questions maybe that board members have had about this document or where we are? Figures. So that leads us then to the second information item, which is the instructional staffing plan. The board has this full document in their packet, and what I was hoping to do, I appreciate you indulging me, would be to kind of walk through some of the high points here. I won't obviously bore you with all of the details, but you know, there are certain elements that we're recommending for the forthcoming year that we would want you to know a little bit more about why and what the thinking is. Behind the first, so it's pages 89 and 90 are the narrative, and then page 91 is the worksheet that board members will see, kind of outlines what the likely additions, reduction, total additions, reductions would be for the forthcoming year if we implemented all of the staffing recommendations. Behind that, you'll see kind of the supporting documentation. These figures are compiled at the school level. I think importantly, they assign individuals to the FTEs, so you have confidence that you know kind of where these sections are and who the teachers are that are carrying these loads.
I just had a question.
Yes.
In the description.
Okay.
And it's just because I'm just trying to understand. So it's on page 90.
Okay.
The eliminating the independent study math supports position,
yes.
PTA, and replacing it. Is that the independent study math support position? Was that someone that worked with kids?
Yes.
And that's being replaced by someone who works with teachers?
Yes. I'd like to maybe share the personalities there so that it would make more sense as to why.
Yeah, I mean, so that's why I wanted to understand why
absolutely.
That was doing. So we're taking one position away from someone that worked with kids, and we're moving it into someone who's going to work with our staff.
Largely with staff, absolutely. Yeah. So that position was actually created last year. The position that you mentioned that works with students to accommodate the return of a teacher who has gone on FMLA. And returned. We obviously had an obligation as the employer to accommodate the necessary work requirements. And so that was the assignment that was made. The individual is now able to teach in a more traditional classroom. And that's where we're recommending that she would then go back into the what did I outline here?
Oh, what's in there? I forget. You have it in there, though.
Hold on just a moment. Oh, the humanities position.
Yeah.
Would return to the humanities position and no longer occupy that supports role. The addition of the individual you mentioned who would not be working with children is the recommended hiring of the math specialist for Roosevelt. And the need for this has become a little bit more apparent as we move towards the adoption of the new math curriculum, K-8. Board members likely will recall that we have assigned math specialists in both elementary schools. For the last 2 years, we have had, and we'll, hopefully we'll continue as far as the larger partnership. For the last several years, we've had a partnership with the University of UIC. But for the last couple of years, a component of that has been contracting for math coaching, which was approximately $60,000 expense annually. The individual who we contracted has done an outstanding job, I think, helping to move the ball forward in middle school, largely middle school math instruction. But we would really like to make that a permanent position. We feel like for the savings, I mean, there would be an additional cost, but by eliminating the coaching costs and bringing on a full-time employer or employee, we would get a lot more for our expenditure, and I think it would be really valuable for the continuity of the program. Right now, the $60,000 contract cost covers how many days, Allison?
Two. 2 days a week.
Over the course of the year?
45 days over the course of the year.
45 days.
Minimum 30.
And that's from UIC?
That's from UIC.
Yeah.
And that's, I think at one of these board meetings, that was one of the PDs that people really loved and reported that they thought it was like the best PD.
It's outstanding. I mean, I think the key piece though is frequency. You know, having somebody here every day, I think can move the work forward a lot faster. And it does provide some opportunity for the same high quality professional development we've had so far, and then it will allow us to make some connections with the elementary schools and articulation going from the elementary schools to Roosevelt. And also building capacity for the collaborative learning teams that we're trying to do. So I think it's a pretty key position. So we'd be lucky to have.
So it would be a new hire then. We'd pull somebody in.
It would be a new hire.
It wouldn't be.
And but to be clear, I think to get back to your point, so likely the addition of this position would cost, I'm guessing, in the range of 25 to 30% more than we're currently paying for those coaching hours. But we'd be getting four times the value.
Yeah.
And importantly, the ability to mobilize this person to assist with the K-4 as well, and to organize.
And I'm assuming that the MAKE position of this independent study math supports that work with kids didn't have appropriate demand from the student population to support continuing it.
That's the principal's recommendation. Yeah. So that is, maybe we should just talk a little bit more about Roosevelt, and then we can move on to each of the elementary schools too. We do have, in addition, at Roosevelt, a outstanding and well-loved art teacher who is intending to retire, Sally McPartland. We're going to miss her terribly. So we will need to, upon her vacating that position, hire a new art teacher. It's anticipated that special education enrollment will remain stable, but at the moment, based upon student needs, well, we likely will have a reduction of one special ed teacher assistant. So with the increasing stability of those aggregate grade levels at Roosevelt, 5, 6, 7, 8, the board will remember we've had some bubbles, enrollment bubbles go through. Combined with what we just addressed there, with the transition from the instructional position to the math specialist, it looks like we will be around flat. You can see on the worksheet, page 91, for Roosevelt School, a net change of zero FTE for the coming year. So we feel like that's a fairly responsible recommendation. At Lincoln School, we also have another faculty member who will be retiring. She's a part-time teacher at both Lincoln and Willard, Ms. Panecki, another well-loved teacher, PD teacher. So we will need to replace her. We are suggesting at both elementary schools the addition of the equivalent of 0.5 FTE in STEM. The reason for this is twofold. Our highly popular STEM program has been very successful. However, as one of our specials, we're finding that unless we have adequate STEM instruction, it's really difficult for our elementary principals to schedule the instructional blocks that are necessary for teachers to collaborate teach together. The addition of the STEM, in, as well as providing some flexibility, will allow the additional STEM teachers, the FTEs, to push into science classes and help with the adoption of next-gen science standards at the elementary level. The board is pretty aware that that's been a challenge for us. We've been focused, as we probably ought to be, very heavily on writing, math, and the reading with the literacy committee. And the next-gen science standards are a really important priority. But at the elementary level, there's not as much time made available for science instruction for children, and not as much time made available for teachers to collaborate around creating high-quality curriculum. So effectively, what that would mean would be that instead of sharing that full-time STEM teacher, half-day at Willard, half-day at Lincoln every day, each school would be recommended to have a full-time STEM teacher.
Can I ask the, you know, that scheduling issue was kind of the same rationale why we added the art teacher this year. So is that still a even with that new art teacher, that full FTE, we're still seeing challenges like that, so we're going to add another.
Now, again, there was a value added with the art because, and that was Mr. Ho, you'll remember, who is now at Willard, and Marta Kosberg here at Lincoln. They've both been assigned MTSS responsibilities outside of the regular instructional time, which I think has been a really nice addition for regular classroom teachers to know that those are being delivered by licensed certified teachers. But we very definitely, a component of this is, to find a point to it, is buying flexibility, because in order for us to ensure that our teachers are able to collaborate in the manner that we're asking them to, and will increasingly ask them to with the ongoing use of co-teaching, hopefully the continued growth in project-based learning and the future adoption of universal design, all of those are going to continue to require collaboration time and flexibility.
I would have to say my role as the personnel committee rep, lots of the literature out there would say, you know, around instructional coaches, that when they're not used efficiently and effectively, many districts or buildings use them, they become kind of encumbered with clerical tasks, and I know that won't happen here.
With the math specialist?
With math and literacy coaches in general, so the literature, as you're aware. You can add another math coach, add another literacy coach, and as the hectic days of testing come and things like that, and they're being asked to do other things. So how do we assure that they're always working with teachers and kids, I guess?
Well, one of the most important things we did, so to give the board some background on people who are in those specialist or coaching roles, we essentially have three different types of folks. We have our technology specialists, which the board will recall, we have one assigned in each school, and their job really is to facilitate technology use in classroom instruction. So they're in classrooms very, very frequently. The second is the math specialists, and we've had up until now just math specialists at the elementary schools. Largely, they have not been coaching. Largely, those math specialists have been working with accelerated instruction and then more recently remediation and intervention for math kids. So the advent of this new math specialist at the middle school certainly will add something here from a coaching perspective that we've not had, but hopefully as well at the elementary, some coordination of math coaching and supports that we really, although we've had two full-time positions, have probably not been maximized. The third group, I think, is the folks that kind of refer to, which are our instructional specialists. They're the most probably similar to what you would find as a conventional coach, teaching coach in most schools. I think there are two things probably that are done to help ensure that their use of time is effective. The first is that they do work very closely with the principals to schedule their days, and the principals have a lot of, admittedly, oversight responsibility for them to see that they're being utilized appropriately instead of, you know, like you say, for cursory tasks. The second, I think, came online with Allison's arrival. There are weekly meetings now with those instructional specialists to ensure that their work is aligned and that they're all supporting the district initiatives. So that doesn't happen in most places. Most districts, of course, are larger than ours. Right. And so to get all of your specialists or coaches together at one time is pretty I found, I think, from an outsider's perspective, I'm not in those meetings on a regular basis, but the kind of discussions that you're, and you can jump in if you feel it's necessary, but the discussions that your folks are having, and then the way in which they're taking back the learning they're getting from each other into their respective schools, as well as the way they're organizing their time, seems to be pretty good assurance that it's...
They're pretty key for implementation. It's very easy for districts to do a materials adoption and hand people new materials and say, thanks for playing, go forth and teach. But really, the implementation piece is the phase that really requires the most attention. So meeting with them weekly really is about planning PD, monitoring the implementation, looking for opportunities for coaching, and you know they're my eyes and ears in the buildings. Principals are too, but principals wear a lot of hats. So while they collaboratively plan and meet with their principals every week, they really do send information flowing in both directions from central office to classrooms and all the way back up. So that communication is really important in terms of keeping everybody rowing in the same direction and just being aware of what the pitfalls are and also what the successes are. There's a lot to celebrate.
So how is their work plan put together, Allison?
How's it put together, the work plan?
For the year. I mean, so they're going to be doing coaching, this, that, and the third thing. At the beginning of the year, is there some sort of thought given to what they're supposed to be doing, how many touches they have with each teacher, on which subject, how they report back, how they find and do? I mean...
Well, a lot of it is tied to district goals. Like right now, we're already starting to plan for next year. Mm-hmm. We're looking at our PD calendars across the year. So, it'll start with collaborative goal setting. So really what they help facilitate the grade level work that goes on. So part of it will be setting collaborative goals in the spring that will set up the work plans for the fall. So sitting with all the teams and saying around math, these are the goals that we're going to set as grade levels or grade spans for next year. And then based on what those goals are, we'll all sit down and map it out, and then we'll start looking like across a week, across a month, across a year, how are we going to plan all that work, build in the touch points, and make sure that we have everybody going in the direction they need to go. So planning is part of it. Typically a coach can really only handle working with 3, maybe 4 teachers at one time in a coaching cycle. Our math coach at Roosevelt, because she's there 2 days a week, her plates are full almost all the time. She also helps me with PD because I don't have that area of expertise. But then at the building level, they do their coaching cycles. They're pretty busy. People really do go to them. They really, really do, especially with all the changes we've had with reading and writing and math. There's no shortage of learning.
Who evaluates their effectiveness, Allison? Do you do that in cooperation
principals,
with the principals?
Principals do that.
So they report to the principals, but they work closely with
you. They do. They report to me, too. So
so you're the one who really evaluates whether we're getting what we need to get from having them in place.
It's a collaboration. This year we have Jennifer Ankerberg, and if you guys are aware, she's our third instructional specialist. So to answer your question, Rich, I think we've really had to look at how the model works. And so the coaching cycle, she supports ELA grades 5 to 8 only, and that's a tremendous amount of work. So her cycle is a quarter long, 10 weeks. She'll work with one grade level, and she'll work through that whole entire cycle with them. This year they're in 2 of the grades looking very specifically at a new resource. So that's a lot of work. And her other main focus that will continue for next year, collaborative structures. There's a great need for that. And a person who can really set that framework. The framework isn't just facilitating the meeting, but bringing the research to the teachers so that they can then meet as a grade level team, and now we're looking at department teams, and really collaborate and look at student work. So that's her beginning stages. So she does a coaching cycle, and then she's doing this collaborative work through professional development with them. That's different than anything we've done before with our other coaches. They were more in the classroom, modeling, talking, finding resources. Now that we've formally adopted a resource, we're finding that she's able to go deeper in the time that the teachers don't always have available. So I'd say that we kind of work together. We meet with her, Larry and I meet with her weekly, and then you meet with her, and then we talk.
Yeah, there are a lot of different
parts moving,
communications that go back and forth. So it's in terms of building capacity and professional development and the organization with an eye towards continuous improvement, the coaches are essential. They really are. And they've been very valuable. So, but we, part of it is you have to have the structures that will support what it is you're trying to do. So the FTE of adding, you know, one full-time STEM teacher in the elementary school especially gives us that flexibility where we can meet, you know, we can set up a schedule where the collaborative meeting is more of a routine, and it provides multiple opportunities across a week. Because we just don't have a lot of time. We've got an hour after school on Thursday. We have institute days across the year. Best practices says you do a minimum of 60 minutes a week. So we just want to make sure we're capitalizing and maximizing all of our opportunities. Because the learning they're doing, we had a great PD today, because Teachers College here is from New York, it's outstanding. I mean, they're really looking at, you know, problems of practice and predictable patterns of student learning that they can teach into proactively, which is really important for differentiation. So,
and the way I understand it, I was talking.
Sidebar.
Torturing.
I distracted him.
So I know I'm torturing Corey with a number of things, but I just want to put a lot of these on the table because, you know, there's a change in education model, and for community members to stay on pace, we have to make sure we're communicating this change effectively, I think. So while I understand that these positions are union RFEA positions, they're not going to be viewed as teachers by the public. They're going to be viewed as administrators. Right? That's
what
you look at.
Teachers by the teachers.
Yeah.
They're sort of a quasi. They're not administrators, but it's kind of a quasi.
But they're going to be to Sally and Joe Q Public. They're administrators.
Right.
They're administrative staff, and I think that's fair. And so there's always going to be questions raised about growth in administration, just to grow administration, right? So we're asking these questions, and I think what the district needs to do, and I'm supportive of this, by the way, so throw a bias out in front. I am supportive, but I'm going to ask you these questions because we have to make sure that we are communicating clearly to the taxpayers of River Forest that what we're doing is the right thing, it's education-focused, it's going to move the needle forward.
And it's cost-effective.
And it's cost-effective. I mean, all those things are important. So when it comes to PD, I'm assuming UIC doesn't just go out the window. I think it's a both and, right? These people come on board, but we're still going to need PD. So it doesn't completely eliminate that cost. Maybe it reduces it.
It reduces it.
So the people that we've described, everyone except for the proposed math specialist, has been on staff now for at least 4 years. So these are not new hires. These are people that have been here for some time and have proven effectiveness. One of the things that was really important, longer-term members of the board will recall when those folks were brought on,
right,
was that there be high accountability and that we were able to attest to results. And I think both anecdotally and from data, we've been able to show how they've helped to move the needle in high-quality teaching. So this math specialist is the additional ask, but you're correct. So the savings would be, the relationship with UIC was the professional development component and then the coaching supplement, which basically brought this individual in to work with the teachers twice a week. That's been the lion's share of the cost. Please don't quote me on this. If you know it off the top of your head, I'm really nervous. But I want to think to the tune, the total cost of that was approximately $80,000 a year, with a roughly three-quarters of that being attributed to the add-on of the coaching. So that's where we feel like the savings, admittedly, there's additional expense because to bring someone on, there's also the benefits component. So, and we understand what happens if you bring someone on and you're not really staying on top of your FTE, that person can, you know, add to your FTE into perpetuity. So we understand the magnitude of the ask. But to be clear, the coaching that we've been able to provide, and you can speak to this if you feel it's you can add to what I'm saying also. Coaching we've been able to provide, particularly the middle school level, has probably been one of the most important elements in moving us to the point where we're now feeling like we can do this full K-8 rollout of math with alignment to the high school, with fidelity. I'm not sure that without that partnership in its entirety, but the coaching as well included within, we would be at that point.
And I'll say this about what I know about the evidence-based model, and I cannot remember the exact effect size from Auden and Pipus' research that the evidence-based model is predicated on. But to have a statistically meaningful effect size, you're looking for 0.25 or greater. And I think the effect size for instructional coaches was north of 1.0, so four times statistically meaningful on moving the needle forward on student achievement, which is why I support this approach. But on the other hand, I do want to make sure that we are explaining it to our community clearly, and that we are in fact putting in place whatever accountability and monitoring metrics we need to ensure that we are getting our bang for the buck. And so I think maybe, Allison, at a future meeting, if we could have a report to the board on what the oversight of these positions really entails and how they're evaluated. We're not going to get into that. That's not our job, but I think we need to understand it.
Well, much like the our classroom teachers are evaluated using the Danielson model, there's a coaching equivalent as well that we use. So the challenge with looking at metrics for coaches is, how do you attribute that this one coach was the one that has the impact on this individual student's test scores? There's not a lot of research to support that, but the key piece really is...
I don't know that you could track it down to the student, but you could look to see if, in fact, things are improving, test scores are improving overall.
You can.
After the implementation, and that more larger body of evidence, I think, is more meaningful, because if you are getting your bang for your buck from your instructional coaches, you should see growth. Now, here, growth is going to be more challenging to show, because we're relatively high-performing.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, and maybe we can see it in some of the areas that the board has indicated some strong concern, the equity initiative, those kinds of things. But I do think there's a way to tie it into growth and student.
It's sort of hard to tease it out, though, because things are changing at the same time.
There's some confounding variables, too.
Yeah.
But if you call them out, I think that's fine. I think part of it is also shining a light on some of the creativity and innovation. I think that the depth of the things that we are moving towards with our students is not going to be aligned to some of the standardized testing that we do. So, you know, highlighting standardized tests makes sense, but then what are the other things?
I'm happy to have other metrics in there. I mean, but the point is we need to know we're getting bang for buck. Especially, you know, what's coming down the road is Tier 3, the normal cost of pensions is ours. So this is now something that in the next teacher contract, et cetera, we have to be ready to deal with, and we have to understand what those impacts are going to be. And all new hires are going to be, you know, Tier 3.
Absolutely.
So it's a new, when you're bringing in a new FTE, it is a new, different kind of new financial obligation.
You know, the other thing we might be able to gather, and we can sidebar about this, would be some perception data from our teachers that are participants in the coaching process, because the degree to which they see value, even if that's not some of the hard quantity.
Yeah, no, but that's helpful.
There's a lot of different ways.
I think that's where they're supposed to have their impact, is mostly on enhancing practice in the classroom by the teachers.
Yes.
And that's what collaboration does. That's really where the best practices are in educational policy. I get that.
Yeah.
But we need to find a way to make sure that we are looking at that and evaluating that fairly. It's a challenge, but I'm throwing it out there.
The extent to which we are being careful with the taxpayer dollars and with making these decisions, because looking at the FTE is one of the first things. If people are going to call us on something,
sure,
that's usually the first thing we hear about.
Sure.
You hired somebody new in administration.
Right.
Why?
Yeah.
Right. And those are important questions.
You bet.
I think it's what you said is right, that the measurements can't just be how do they do on standardized testing, because that's never going to tell the whole story.
Right.
And I think we have to take parents along on that journey so that 5 years from now, we've been measuring the right things.
And Stacey, the communication piece is huge, which is why we're talking about
right.
it at the board level.
Right.
It is a major communications challenge.
And it's why I wanted to preface my comments with, I'm not saying this because I'm trying to find a reason to sink it. I'm in favor of this practice. I don't necessarily think we've done, I know we haven't done the job on communicating it from education jargonese down to the community well, and I think we need to. And education, I think, is going to continue to evolve around this path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we need to find a way to talk about this so the parents and folks, frankly, that don't have their kids in school understand that the district's doing the prudent thing, the right thing.
I think that's the point.
Yeah.
It's to underscore the value that this provides and the solutions that are being presented in advance of problem surfacing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I appreciate very much the conversation we're having about that.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly we'll link Dawn in on that too.
I do worry a little bit about the perception in the community that they are viewed as administrators, because they're absolutely not. They don't evaluate,
9-month employee, RFEA members, collective bargaining association members.
They don't teach kids. I'm just saying.
Optics.
I'm just saying, you guys are looking at it like professionals in the field.
As opposed to people paying their tax bill.
Right.
They are administrators to the world at large.
They do or do not calculate into the student to teacher ratio?
It depends how you calculate that.
Okay.
Yeah, you could do it either way. Absolutely. So let's move on to Willard, if that's okay. Unless there are other questions.
Since we were on Roosevelt, I just had a quick question for clarification for my own edification.
Sure.
There was a resignation mentioned. And personnel that's not mentioned in the narrative?
That's correct.
And then not shown in the chart versus projected staff for 2018-19.
We received the resignation this morning.
Oh, okay.
And all of your board packets were updated today. Well, Tracy did that.
Okay,
but,
got it.
To reflect the resignation.
Okay.
That's in the 8th grade math teaching position.
Got it. Okay.
We will need to obviously fill that position.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah.
Is,
I would think so.
Because I'm not so good.
You don't
I'm not so good
it?
At pre-calc. But statistics, maybe. Pre-calc, no.
Just dust it off.
Yeah, but a good catch. So at Willard School, again, we mentioned that we anticipate a decline of 0.5 FTE. That's somewhat offset by, you've noticed in both Lincoln and Willard, the recommendation that we increase a 0.2 FTE to facilitate the relationship between the blended preschool at River Forest Community Center and both kindergartens. But we feel like that's, again, also a good investment. It's Anna Petrick, who we were able to decrease her FTE at RFCC to offset some of that too. So her total load will now be, we recommend, would be a 0.8 instead of a 0.5. It's actually not a 0.4 increase, it's a 0.3, but 2.2 would be assigned to both elementary. As mentioned previously, the other 0.5 of the STEM would be assigned to Willard School, and we again have some folks retiring from Willard. Cheryl Harding, who's been with the district for many years as a speech teacher and will be missed terribly, is retiring, and then, as was mentioned, Terry Panecki is a 0.5 over at Willard. She shared between both schools. So overall special ed enrollment at Willard is expected to remain stable. That's actually very significant because, as you know, we have a higher student special ed population at Willard. Some of our specialized programs are housed there. So we're glad, again, that there's some expectation of stability. The long and short of this, and of course, special ed is mentioned here on page 90. You know, in sum total, we're recommending a decrease of 2 FTEs in special ed assistance. The thing for the board to remember is that, you know, it's kind of talking apples and oranges if you mix FTE of faculty and FTE of teacher assistants. While it's still technically warm bodies and very, very important people who are doing very, very important work, the costs for teacher assistants, you know, the savings is much more limited than a full-time faculty member. Of course, they still receive benefits. They're still, again, very, very important, integral employees. So if you take a look at page 91, this is really kind of the long and short of it. You can see in the top two-thirds of the page, that's an accounting for our anticipated net increase. which would be, if the board approved the recommendations, we'd be making a 0.8 FTE in sum total, with a decline of those two non-certified support staffs. That's roughly, if you were to say, well, what's it in dollars, Ed? I would say it's close to a wash, but it's March. And so the thing, you know, saying it's a wash would assume that all these figures hold through the end of August.
Right. Which has never been our experience.
Well, what normally happens is about a third of the time we pick up some additional kindergarten instruction at one of the other schools, and then usually about half the time we pick up some FTE in special ed, in the special ed support. So, and that's usually due to move-ins, you know, from students that have IEPs or who qualify for special needs services as a result of IEP meetings in the summer. So, when you consider our total enrollment is up, that we're running more programs than we've ever run before. The partnership with the River Forest Community Center will be continuing into its second year. Doing, I think, some really important CNI work, supporting, you know, the integration of curricula that we've never had before. And teachers are probably working harder than at least I've ever seen them work in the last 7 years. We do feel like this is a really responsible recommendation, but we don't take lightly the comments that have been made tonight about perceptions and the need for us to continue to mind the store.
Okay, so I think we've had a pretty robust discussion here, but I want to make sure everyone's got any other concerns on the table about this or questions. Everyone comfortable?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
Good analysis, thank you.
Okay. So I think we do need
it's just an information item. I hope that the board
will be taking action on this in the future.
Right.
Safety.
So the next item we just wanted to
share.
Are we sure? Sorry? Yes, we are for safety, very much so.
We agree.
Anthony and I, we just kind of wanted to announce to the board, we'll be co-chairing a District 90 Safety Plan Review Committee that will be stepping off after spring break in probably mid-April. The purpose of this committee, just for the board's awareness, is really to take a long and deeper look at the safety and crisis plans that are in place for the district. We held our annual safety meeting a couple of weeks ago now, with the first responders in River Forest, police and fire. We do that every year, typically in May, in preparation for the upcoming school year, but we felt it was important under current circumstances to hold that a little bit more quickly. And while, again, the first responders are amazing in our village and very, very knowledgeable, they gave us great confidence that the crisis plans that we have in place and the safety protocols that we have in place are appropriate and reflect their suggestions and recommendations. There was some agreement that this is probably a good time now after several years. There's nothing that might not be gained from convening a committee, taking a look at broader best practices that maybe have come on, you know, since most of our crisis planning was established back in 2011, and see if there are opportunities to maybe make some improvements that, you know, we've not investigated before. So we're going to launch that later this month. We've requested that the RFEA please solicit a faculty representative from each school. Both the River Forest Police and Fire have agreed to send at least one liaison to participate. I think our anticipated committee numbers right now is 9 or 10. Is that right, April?
Exactly.
And we'll be getting started on that work. Again, really the goal is to ensure, while I do feel very confident, and I'm pleased to know that that's affirmed by both River Forest Police and Fire, that our current plans are very appropriate and of very high quality. We just don't want to miss something. And best practice in this area is an interesting element, because there are many occasions in which you will find people with a great deal of expertise recommending different protocols. So in some cases, inconsistent protocols. And so to learn as much as we can about that, I know you and I are attending some trainings in the coming month, both in other school districts with the insurance cooperative, to learn as much as we can about that, and then making sure that we're applying what's best in River Forest based upon our facilities, our first responder recommendations, I think is going to be the most important thing. But we want to have teachers as active participants. We know that they're the ones who see safety, and their responsibility for their students on a daily basis. And we know that they're going to bring a lot to the discussion as well. This evening, President Adusi is hosting a meeting with some community members over at Village Hall. I think it started at 7 tonight, to talk about the importance of safety. And so, and I believe Chief O'Shea was intending, Police Chief O'Shea was intending to attend that meeting too. So we're confident that if there are recommendations or things that we should be considering from the perspective of community members, that the police department will bring it to the table. So, more to come.
Is that something that you want me as a facilities chairperson involved with?
We had not thought of that, not because we certainly wouldn't want your involvement, but I'm not sure it's specific to facilities. Hardening of facilities certainly is an important element. If you would like to be a part of that, we'd be honored to have you on the committee. Some of what we discuss deals more, as you would expect, with procedures. But hardening of facilities, or the discussion about whether or not additional hardening necessary, would certainly be a component. So if you'd like to consider that, we'd certainly be pleased to have you.
Okay.
And your expertise. Thank
you. Crossing guards.
So the last item I think we had tonight was specific to crossing guards. You'll note, board members, in your packet on page 101, there is a document entitled Village of River Forest Policy for Crossing Guards. This verbiage is something that the village discussed, to my understanding, last week and was recommended by the village administration for insertion in village policy about how crossing guards would be managed and coordinated. The village administrator, Eric Palm, had forwarded me this language, and Anthony and I had an opportunity to talk with him a little bit about it before they had moved forward with this, largely to understand what policy meant at the village. And our understanding from that conversation is that it's not quite the same as policy as seen through the eyes of the school code. So obviously board members adopt, from a governance perspective, adopt policy for the purpose of directing, kind of the school district to follow certain parameters and how we conduct a number of things. But it's very high level in the school board world, whereas at the village administration world, it's more equivalent to administrative procedure. It's how they intend to implement something that's already been memorialized elsewhere. So in talking with Eric, he had provided us with some of this verbiage and was gracious in considering some of our recommendations about edits and some other things. And the resulting language that you have here on page 101 that was approved by the village, you'll see comports exactly with the language that starts on page 103 and is actually in District 9D format for administrative procedure. So they dovetail. And the hope would be that by having the same kind of directives in place in both entities about how we intend to move this ongoing partnership forward in managing crossing guards, we're going to ensure some continuity and some strong understanding about how this thing actually works. So just wanted the board to be aware of that. Again, it doesn't require board approval because it's an administrative procedure, but this is what you should expect from the relationship we have with the village in implementing crossing guards. So that's the superintendent's report.
So I'm going to need a motion to go into closed session in a second. For everyone that's out here, you could hang around. We are not taking actions when we come back.
Personnel report.
I'm sorry. We are going to take, we're going to approve this giant personnel report that's in the packet, or fight over it. One or the other is going to happen when we come out of closed session. But I need a motion to go into closed session according to Illinois statute for the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the public body or legal counsel for the public body, including hearing testimony and a complaint lodged against an employee of the public body or against legal counsel for the public body to determine its validity.
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.